Still though, fuck that guy's 8-year-old. That guy's 8-year-old sounds like a real prick.
That's the bumper.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's part two of our Alcoholics Anonymous and Atheist special with our guest, Zach Nyhus. Crack open a cold one and listen. Soda.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by Tim Wick and
Hi
Molly.
There. Hi.
You guys are assholes.
And you've just been spending this silence watching our guest try not to make any noise.
And our guest for part two of our Alcoholics Anonymous special?
Extravaganza?
Celebration? I don't know.
Hooray, alcoholics!
Yay! Is Zach Nyhus. See? Said it right.
Nyhus.
Fuck you, Molly.
Hi.
Hi, and we're going to talk more about Alcoholics Anonymous and being an atheist in that program.
Yeah. I'm Zach Nyhus, and I'm an atheist.
Hi, Zach.
Everybody's supposed to say hi, Zach.
Oh, hi, Zach.
Shut up, you're not supposed to know we're atheists.
So, tell us a little about your experience in Alcoholics Anonymous.
I go to this really awesome meeting that in some ways you could say it saved my life. It's an AA meeting for atheists and agnostics. And it's kind of a new thing in the world of AA for you know, many, many decades. AA's had this, like, this kind of stereotype of being a very religious, godly, you know, kind of push faith on you, kind of an institution.
We talked about that last
I mean, officially, it kind of still is. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at their 12 steps, there's God's mentioned in 5 or 6 of them.
Yeah.
Do they just substitute out those? Kind of like just go over God with an eraser and some white out?
Sort of. In the last 5 or 10 years, there's been this, like, movement of these new kind of AA meetings for atheists and agnostics. We refer to them as 4A meetings.
Right,
Alcoholics Anonymous for Atheists and Agnostics. Mm. And we have our own version of the 12 steps, which is, many of them are exactly the same. I have them here, I brought them with. I'm just going to read a couple examples here.
Read the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, some of them are exactly the same.
Okay. Sure.
So I'll read, because not all of the traditional AA steps mention God.
Nick read them all last time, so we were...
Yeah, so just for example, like, the traditional step 2 says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, at 4A meeting, we say, came to believe that we could be restored to sanity.
Okay.
Not ascribing it to a particular
higher power. You're not wasted or useless. Like, it's not like it can't happen.
Right. Yeah. Or step 3 is, traditionally, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And our version of that is, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to that which is greater than ourselves. Doesn't have to be a deity. Or even a spiritual thing. It can be completely tangible and realistic.
Sure. Can you read it one more time?
Version is, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to that which is greater than ourselves.
Does the traditional one start with, we made the decision?
Yeah. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to God.
That could be like your family. Yeah. I mean, like,
That could totally be a bulldozer, because I'm pretty sure that a bulldozer could take me.
Yeah.
Or society. Like, I want to be a productive member of society. I don't feel like it can be being you know, this behavior.
And I could totally turn myself over to physics. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you said that, because that is what I refer to when people ask me, well, what's your higher power? Like, how are you functioning in AA? You don't have a higher power? Like, I say, I do have a higher power. My higher power is nature, science, the laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, the powers that govern the way the universe functions.
Right.
Those are powers that are way greater than myself. And I think one of the most important aspects of recovery from any kind of addiction is humility and realizing and understanding that you're not a real big deal, you know? And finding humility.
Yeah. By the way, it was Mark Baker, last week's guest. We kept him around just to...
Yeah.
For a whole week.
Yeah.
He was tied up in the corner.
He's been sleeping on my couch in the basement.
Chained up with Jeffrey.
So, keeping in mind the fact that I am very insignificant in the grand scheme of things and there are powers that are not under my control helps keep me humble and sober.
Perspective.
Yeah.
With it. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
One of the things we talked about last week with the presence of God in so many of the steps was it kind of seemed like responsibility wasn't being taken for the actions or decisions by the individual. And that some of that was like, I'm broken, God fix me, kind of a thing. Do you feel like that's different with these revised steps more so? Or is it still kind of giving yourself up to the system of AA, I guess, or to physics or what have you?
With the meeting that I go to, and I think that it's pretty common in these 4A meetings, is that it's left up to the individual how to answer that question. Now, there's definitely a little bit increased emphasis on personal responsibility, because that is one of my biggest problems that I had and one of the reasons that I failed so many times back before I had really figured out that I was an atheist and before I had discovered these awesome 4A meetings. I was going to traditional AA and I had a real problem, and it took me a while to identify it, but I had a real problem with the lack of personal responsibility. It's such a cop-out to just say, like, oh, I'm going to turn my will over to God, and I'm going to turn all my decisions over to God, and it's such a cop-out.
You're not going to let go and let God.
Yeah, that's such a bullshit cop-out.
He's nodding a lot over here. I can see.
So in these...
Rolling his eyes, too. There's some eye-rolling going on.
Jesus, take the
wheel. Not at Zach, but...
No, right. Yeah. Yeah. So in the atheist agnostic Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that I go to... you can take responsibility however you want. Now, some people, the meeting isn't strictly just for atheists and agnostics. We say that it's open to anybody.
It's just secular.
Yes, it's
because
regardless
secular
of,
things are open to everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Regardless of faith or lack thereof. So, some people still like to have a sense of a higher power, but they define it as like, the community, the group of people, is where they draw their strength from.
That's I mean, that's kind of how we've talked about this before. That's kind of how I define spiritual is you know, there's something bigger than you that could be humankind, our potential as, you know, man, our society, the community, right? I get that. I like that aspect of it.
I was so relieved to find this meeting. Because I had tried so many times, I had so many false starts. Unlike Mark, I really envy Mark's experience. He had indicated that once he made the decision to stop drinking, that was it. Mm. And I, like many people, I had lots of false starts, and I tried so many times because I knew that I was screwing my life up, and I knew that I was making bad decisions, and I was making an ass out of myself. And I actually tried to go the traditional route, and I tried to work it, and I tried to do it the way the AA evangelists.
You work it to work it.
Yeah. I tried to do that, and it just didn't work. And there was something that was bugged me, and then I Google searched like AA meetings, and like I saw Atheist AA in Uptown, and it just jumped out at me as
in
if
Uptown,
it was like,
wait a minute,
as if
how did that happen there?
Yeah. Right. There's only like two or maybe three in the entire state of Minnesota, and two of them are in the Twin Cities, and it just jumped out at me, and I went, and I'm like, oh my God, how come I didn't find this sooner? And it was great, and it's way less like regimented. It's way less, there's not as much like mantra protocol saying, reading through all this kind of crap at the beginning.
It doesn't feel like church.
Exactly, it doesn't. It's super chill, super laid back, not as much protocol. There's not like praying at the end. That's one of the things that really bugged me about traditional AA.
Hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
But they're not, how do they put it? Not allied with any denomination or sect. But all of our prayers happen to be Christian.
Yeah, very specific.
When I was in all three of my inpatient hospitalizations,
they have a spirituality requirement where, because you're basically gridded, so your whole day is planned out, and you have to be, you know, and you're all moving together in this group, and one of them was spirituality. And when I was in, the first time I was in something was for anorexia, and I was like, I went to one, and afterward, I'm like, I'm not going to that again. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm not going to that again. I'm an atheist. This is that was, and they're like, well, it's not denominational. I'm like, bullshit, it's Judeo-Christian. Like, I'm not going to that. And they had to have this whole meeting about whether or not I was allowed to opt out, and they had decided I was allowed to just sit in the day room with a nurse watching and just read. And I ended up, I lied a little, because what I ended up saying was, oh, for me, being spiritual is about, like, self-reflection. And they were like, oh, okay, like, well, we'll let you have that.
It's, well, then,
like,
it's, well, all right.
Yeah.
And
I just,
As long as you're spiritual, in some way.
And I just used that. I played that card in all my other ones. I was like, I'm not going to the spirituality class. And people would come back and be like, you really missed it. I feel so much better. I'm like, I'm sure you do. Good for you. Like,
that's so interesting, because that's one of the things that I believe that whatever works for you is good for you.
Well,
and
yeah,
some people need the religious, faith-based, God-based thing in AA, and they need that. And if that's what it takes for you to get sober and not wreck your life, that's good for you. But don't try to cram it down my throat. And I, like, stopped going to so many meetings over the years of trying to get sober because they were trying to cram their thing down my throat.
Well,
that sounded really dirty.
Like, so it was like Catholicism.
In more ways than one.
Right. I wonder what their rate of success would be if they kept that in mind and tried to make it more open to people who believe or don't believe or believe in different things. Like, people, how many people get turned away because they don't like that aspect of it?
I have a question for both of you guys here. Did you ever feel like you weren't going to be able to be a sober person because you didn't believe in God and all the people that were around you seemed to? And did it ever make you worry that you were never going to be able to be sober because of that?
In the beginning, thoughts like that gnawed at me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And back when I was still new enough and kind of naive enough to believe that there might actually be some magic in this whole shebang, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I came to realize that, like, no, this is possible. I'm just not doing it right. But it's not because I'm not finding this religious magic.
Mm. Mark, what about you? Did you ever have that doubt of that your atheism was preventing you from getting sober?
Not really. I saw plenty of people who were not atheists who were failing left and right. I saw no reason that my atheism would have anything to do with that.
Okay.
I mean, pretty much off the bat, I recognized the idea of a spiritual malady was just bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the science to back up that's not how it works.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so...
I know.
Addiction is a chemical thing. I mean, if you look at the way the brain works, look at the way it responds to different chemicals, I mean, addiction, you can see it happening.
I know one of the things they struggle with getting sober is the idea that for a lot of people, it means they need all new friends. And for a lot of people, it means that their only friends are going to be these newly sober ex-alcoholics who, I wonder if they're all religious or they all feel like they're drinking this religious Kool-Aid, if there are people out there that are thinking, well, I guess I don't want to be sober if I have to hang out with these assholes, you know, like,
and
I mean,
that's one of the most awesome great things about 4A is because there's so many people out there struggling with addiction, struggling with chemical abuse, alcohol, drugs, whatever, even probably like gambling and sex addiction, that they want help and they want to get better and they know they have a problem,
mm-hmm.
but they're non-religious, or maybe they're like straight up atheist. And they're like, oh my God, I don't want to have God crammed down my throat at this meeting. So I'm not going to go. I'm just going to suffer. Yeah.
Before you mentioned it, I didn't even know there was a secular, you know, AA thing happening. And I mean, the whole system seems tainted with religion. Christianity, really.
Yeah.
I mean, just come out and say it. And I don't know. That would be a barrier to me. if I was seeking help. It was. It absolutely would be.
I wanted to comment on something you'd said a few minutes ago, Molly, about this kind of forced spirituality at this program that you were in. And I had almost the exact same thing. I kind of alluded to in the past about how I was getting myself in trouble in my life. I was fucking my life up because of alcoholism. And one of the things that happened is I've gotten a couple DWIs. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness I've never hurt anybody. I've never damaged any property. Right. I've never crashed.
Sure.
But I've driven drunk and got caught. And that was stupid. But anyway, I was in court-ordered outpatient treatment. And the it was ordered by the government that I am in this outpatient treatment program. Oh. And the woman counselor, who was a very nice person, and she had very good intentions, but it was obvious that she was a very strong Christian, and there was always a subtext. Now, she never came out and said it, but she insisted that there be spirituality, and I'm like, but I'm not, but I don't believe in that. That's, but no, you don't have to believe in God. You just have to be spiritual. I'm like, but think about the word, spiritual, spirits. I don't believe in spirits. Spirits are magical. And I don't believe in that.
Right.
And she's like, no, but, and she kind of sputtered a little bit. And I'm like, you do realize that you're an employee, you're like, you know, a county employee in some
state representative.
For the government, you can't totally.
She kind of shut up and I kind
of. We were talking last episode, saying like, you know, it's that there's a lot of people in the cities and the state that, you know, are recovering alcoholics. And I really think that. The more I think about it, I you know, there's Hazelden here, and there's also on top of that there's the Pride Institute, the Proud Institute, I think it is, which is a GLBT friendly rehab, where one of my favorite authors.
Pride Institute.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was Pride or Proud.
Minnesota Teen Challenge.
Yep, and so I mean there's a lot of like, you know, residential, on top of all the hospitals and other.
I have a friend that went to Hazelden.
I spent a month in Wilmer.
Well, and like one of my favorite authors, Augustin Burroughs, that's where he, in his book Dry, they sent him to Pride Institute, which I think he calls Proud to kind of but it's, that's where they sent him, and he talks about how when he found out he was going to what he calls gay rehab, he was very excited because he expected it was going to be very lavish and posh, and then they took him to
like Pink
and then
boys.
They took him to where it is, and it's in Eden Prairie in like the worst 70s building like I've seen. It's right by our house.
It's an institution. It's, like, it's not gonna be fancy.
Clearly an institution with like shitty linoleum and all of it, and like, he was disappointed.
That's funny.
Aren't we all gay rehab sounds like something else. That's Marcus Bachman went through gay rehab.
That's a different kind of
rehab. You know, I think one of the things that comes to me as we're talking about this, and it actually goes back a little bit to our religious talk
I love that film.
A couple of weeks ago, is that as an atheist, coming out is important because it shows other people that it's okay to be an atheist.
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the things that was hardest for me at first was just that idea that, you know, I don't know who around me feels the same way I do. Mm. I don't know if I start just talking horrible things about religion or whatever, if I'm going to be offending somebody, because I assume I'm going to be offending anybody, everybody. And so I don't know where I can have that conversation about what I believe. Mm-hmm. And I would think that makes it hard, that's what made an atheist AA a lot easier, is because you've got some people that believe the same way you do to actually be with through the process.
I always felt like an other in traditional AA meetings, and people were really nice, and it was not most people weren't actively trying to force religion or faith on you, but somewhere. But
yeah, but I mean,
I still felt I felt like an outsider. I felt like I was an infiltrator.
Well, it's the same reason that they have have, you know, like rehab centers and mental hospitals and things like that are for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, so that's a baseline. You don't have to worry that if you say, I was with my girlfriend and I got really drunk and she and I had a fight, that you have someone going, well, there's your problem right there. You know, you don't have to worry about people like reacting to what's not the problem.
Yeah.
And so, like, in this instance, Zach being an atheist is not the problem.
Exactly.
The problem is he's drinking. And so
to
have someone who's judging you on something that has nothing to fucking do with what you're there for is good to have that removed from the equation entirely.
Yeah.
You know, Mark was talking last week about the fact that he doesn't go to as many AA meetings because that makes him uncomfortable. I think that, you know, that's a good point, that it alienates.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a secular a secular meeting, in my opinion, a secular meeting doesn't alienate.
Right.
If you take God out of the equation, then the people who believe in God can still believe in God.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate inclusion.
Yeah. Is, there's a small handful of theists that come to our, that self-identified theists that come to our meeting because they like the open-mindedness.
Sure.
They're progressive, liberal-minded people who happen to believe, have their own faith. I don't know if they're Christian specifically or not, but it doesn't matter. I mean, they come because they like the open-minded inclusion.
There
everybody's
are,
okay.
Jewish people and Catholics even that go to Unitarian Church just because it's the community for them and it's the open-mindedness.
All the inclusion,
or
none of the dogma.
Right, exactly. That makes total sense to me.
There's a funny anecdote about the inception of our meeting. There is like a governing body of Alcoholics Anonymous that's kind of responsible for manufacturing those little medallions that everybody gets, and manufacturing the literature, and publishing the magazine and the newsletters.
And it's anonymous,
and all that.
So nobody knows who they are, right?
No.
Sorry.
They only know his first name and last initial.
There's committees and boards and all this. But anyway, so, and if you want to get on these published lists of, if you want
to have an official chapter.
Yeah, to have an official chapter. You have to abide by a certain set of guidelines. And our meeting, now this was before I joined, they were not gonna acknowledge us as an official meeting because the people in charge were more religious and they were more traditional and they just didn't like the idea of it.
Unsanctioned renegade AA group.
Yeah,
they weren't gonna allow us to happen. So
you can't just go around healing people, Zach. Come on.
It was a big right.
You're gonna have to make your own fucking coins.
Yeah, that's what it was gonna be. And it was a big row, it was a big debate, a controversy. And the way it got settled, the way that our meeting was allowed to be officially recognized was that we had to name our meetings have names in the listings, in the directories. Mm-hmm. They have a name. And our name, we agreed to name our meeting after a chapter of the Big Book. Now there's a chapter in chapter 4 in the what's called the, it's like the Alcoholics Anonymous Bible handbook thing. Most people just call it the Big Book. Anyway, chapter 4 is called We Agnostics. So the name of our meeting is We Agnostics of Uptown.
You were going to tell us about this. I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. So that's how we were able to get that. This was before I joined, but I keep saying we, but because we named our meeting after this chapter. But the chapter is just ludicrous. Even people who are religious, some people acknowledge how horrible it is. I mean, this was written many, many, many decades ago, but it's just condescending.
Let's hear some. And I gotta hear some.
I have a few passages from the chapter 4 of the Big Book, We Agnostics. Here's a sentence. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, that's capitalized, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. Spirit of the universe is also capitalized, the SMU.
Personification of ideals.
Yeah, well, sure, because the spirit of the universe is Carl Sagan. So.
Yeah. Here's a paragraph illustrating why we should believe in God. The prosaic steel girder, this is like kind of a parable. The steel girder is a mass of electronics whirling around each other at incredible speed. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. Science tells us so. We have no reason to doubt it. When, however, the perfectly logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there is an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence, right there, our perverse streak comes to the surface and we laboriously
I'm sorry. Did I just hear you say perverse streak?
Oh, that's your speech.
You just sort of railroaded over that. Perverse
streak.
Is that what they say?
Right? Is that the term for the spiritual malady?
Yeah.
The part that makes you drink?
The part that makes you an atheist. No, it's the
perverse streak.
It's the imp of the perverse.
Yeah. Our perverse streak comes to the surface and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. We read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments, thinking we believe this universe needs no God to explain it. Were our contentions true, it would follow that life originated out of nothing, means nothing, yep, and proceeds nowhere.
Oh my God. I love how they... Okay, so I just want to point out that the way they use logically in that sentence is not the way logically means. When you say the perfectly logical assumption that underneath all the science there's God, that's not what logic is.
Yeah. But then to say, that's hilarious. Yeah,
super funny.
It's like, what does your science have to say about this? Okay, answer me that, smart guy.
Because that's stupid.
Well, my lady, what holds up the turtle?
Right. Yeah.
Here's one last little gem.
All right.
I had another a wordy one, but we won't waste the time on that. Here's one short one. Actually, this is near the end of the chapter. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there.
Oh, that's the God-shaped hole right there.
The God-shaped hole.
Yeah,
right there.
So it's just so rude and condescending. It's a terrible, terrible chapter, but we named our group after it so that we could exist.
Yeah, the God-shaped hole isn't real unless I can put my dick in it.
Have I got news for you?
we'll make sure to put a link to your group, I think, on the show notes.
Yeah, sure.
I can.
If there are any atheists listening to us grappling with alcoholism,
for real. Yeah. Like, absolutely. Yeah, that's totally. Something...
It's Wednesdays and Sunday evenings in Uptown, and details will be on the site. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you want me to say them right now.
We'll put them on the site.
Yeah, we'll have them up for
that'll
sure.
That'll be easier.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's time for five questions.
It is time for five questions.
Five questions.
All right.
Our first question is, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
I mailed in my answers a long time ago.
I know, so
you haven't gotten to them. Garbage.
Yeah.
We're done.
That answer is dead.
We're skipping right by those. Somebody else just moved up.
I had said at that point in time, I had said Killing Them Softly because I'd just seen it in the theater. It was
awesome.
Yeah,
we don't care about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to say...
Live in the present, Zach.
Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh.
I want to see it.
Oh, you haven't seen
it?
For Christ's sake.
I know, it's my movie.
It is your movie. I mean, God, on so many levels.
I know.
Yeah, it's like romantic comedies are so easy to completely fuck up.
Yeah.
It's hard. There's not many really quality romantic comedies.
I agree. Well,
not many. And this is one of them.
Tim, you said...
I think it's okay. I don't go for the manic pixie dream girl movies.
I don't think she is. You haven't seen it yet.
She hasn't seen it.
What I'm referring to is when you were telling us you thought it was okay, what you said. Romantic comedies in general, you're not a big fan of because you know what's going to happen. They're going to get together.
I don't think I've said that.
I thought you said that.
I like romantic comedies in general, actually.
Interesting.
It's not a bad romantic comedy, but it is the lead female is a trope that I am tired of.
Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't put her in that category, but yeah. I mean...
I will have to be the deciding vote.
Yes.
the Kinder trope. Yeah.
I think of Zooey Deschanel and 500 Days of Summer. That's manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And I think Jennifer Lawrence's character is a different type of person.
She may be a different type of manic pixie dream girl. She's still a manic pixie.
But she doesn't have mental illness and is not a total slut.
What?
This is my movie. Oh my God! Wow!
Wait! The character in the movie. Never mind. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Moving on. Sorry.
Spoilers.
Number two. Who is your favorite atheist character?
It's really easy for a person to go like to Han Solo. For a person like me, given my interest, to say like Han Solo or Malcolm Reynolds. But I am gonna go with what I originally sent in. Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood.
Oh yeah.
Hardcore atheist. Asshole. He's one of those characters that's really refreshing when it's done well, and it has a lot to do with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh yeah.
Oh, sure.
His amazing performance.
Bowling alley scene, man.
Oh yeah.
Fucking so good.
I drink your milkshake.
It's so good.
like when the protagonist is such a horrible person, but he's still like compelling, and
you're kind of rooting for him, and you're
riveted by this. Well, terrible person.
That's because the person he's up against isn't any better.
Yeah,
no. That's true.
You know, it's It's a movie.
Different kind of asshole.
There Will Be Blood is a movie about terrible people. There's yeah. one. There's
the most
one.
You've ever lost in a
there's one good person in that movie, and it's his sons.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
There's one.
I got the wrong one.
That's the only good person in that movie. So it's like you can kind of root for that character because it's not like there's anybody else better.
Right.
The only kid, the only person in the character that's a good person is the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They weren't even listening to me. Were you?
He just said that.
I was too busy correcting my wife.
He was too busy correcting me because I said a line from No Country for Old Men because I totally conflated them for a second.
They came out at the same time.
I know. That's and they're kind of yeah.
They're kind of companion movies.
I liked when the train to Yuma got there. That was.
That was funny.
I'm gonna do question number three. What is your geekiest hobby?
My geekiest hobby is I was almost gonna say that I was almost gonna change my answer and say that it's like arguing with people on the internet about shit that does not matter, and that drives my girlfriend nuts. Like I stay up like, honey, I'm going to bed. I'm like, all right, I'll be there in a minute.
Somebody's
wrong on the internet. Yes, I can't go to bed.
Teach this asshole lesson. Nobody will.
So I spend a lot of time doing that, but it's got to be collecting Star Wars action figures, specifically Yoda figures. It used to be Yoda everything.
Okay, hang on. So, when I was a kid, maybe like 4 or 5, my parents won an auction at like an estate sale, and I got like almost all of the original Star Wars toys.
Awesome.
Millennium Falcon, the Hoth playset.
Oh,
and it was all open, so I could just, you know, play with it.
Awesome.
But I think I have like 3.5 Yodas.
Nice.
3.5 Yodas.
The light skin or dark skin?
Light, I think.
Oh, no, there's like a light green one and there's a dark green one.
I think light. He's kind of lime green.
Does he still have his snake?
So there's cocaine.
Is it the orange snake or the brown snake?
I'll have to dig them up.
They're awesome.
They're in my dad's garage.
I like to pride myself of that I have every single Yoda figure and every card back variation. Like still unopened in the package.
How many are there?
Oh God! I'd have to recount them because every few months they're still making.
I bet Brooke knows exactly how many there are.
Are you
40, 50 something?
40 or 50 variations of Yoda.
Wow.
Okay. Are you able to send us a picture of your Yodas that we could?
I could lay them all on my bed. I recently moved into a new apartment that's way smaller. I used to have them all on the wall in a big like matrix.
Oh, that's
all
my
in plastic clamshells.
That's my Doctor Doom figures.
Yeah. I used to have them all on the wall. We just moved, and they're all stacked up on a shelf in my closet. I could take them down.
Take a picture of the stack, even.
And yeah, I could do that.
We just want a picture of a bunch of Yodas.
We just want a picture of a bunch of Yodas to put on the show.
I will get you a picture of a bunch of Yodas in the package. It's pretty awesome.
I don't have nearly that many Indiana Jones. I'm feeling pretty wimpy.
Yeah, you should.
But I also take that shit out.
I have a couple of vintage Indiana Jones
figures. I also take that shit out of the box.
You should feel inadequate.
Fuck the box.
Yeah. Well,
fuck the box.
Oh, well, the things that I want to open, I buy two of. Some things I buy two of, and then,
I do that with, I'll buy the original, open the original, but leave the variant unopened. For Dr. Doom.
That's smart.
I may be an adult, but I like to play with my toys.
So, question four is, what's your favorite sandwich? And details.
My favorite sandwich can no longer be purchased because there's this restaurant, this bar and grill, right next to the West Bank of the U of M campus.
Well, there's your problem. It's a bar.
Restaurant. Right at Seven Corners. It was called Grandma's. And it was a cool place.
Yeah.
And Grandma's had...
Was it the same kind of Grandma's like up north and stuff? Was it that same...
I think it's the same...
Okay, yeah.
The same company, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
It was right next door to the Holiday Inn, which is still there. And they had the most amazing Monte Cristo. I like a Monte Cristo sandwich. Mm-hmm. But this Monte Cristo... was the most amazing one I'd ever had.
What made it so good?
What they did is, they took all the big piles of all the meat and the cheese, and it was like double decker. There was like the bottom bread, the meat, middle bread, more meat and cheese and bacon and all that good stuff. And then they would cut it into quarters, and they would dip each of those quarters in batter.
Yeah.
It's
a Monte Cristo.
Usually the quarters instead of the whole sandwich.
Usually they just use like French toast batter.
Yeah.
I'm talking about actual like the kind of batter
like deep fried chicken batter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like deep fried
Holy
chicken
fuck.
Batter.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's like death on a plate.
Yeah. Like the really thick badass batter, and they would dip that in there and deep fry each individual quarter so that they were all completely covered. And then it comes with this some kind of berry.
Raspberry kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I didn't want that. I just wanted I wanted honey mustard. That's what I always did. I, and whenever I get Monte Cristos, there's another The Currens in South Minneapolis, Currens Family Restaurant. Yeah. They do a good Monte Cristo.
I've never had a Monte Cristo.
There's if you go to Mystic Lake,
I fear it.
If you go to Mystic Lake Casino, there is like a little cafe, kind of not their big restaurant, but like a little cafe in the lobby. They do a really good Monte Cristo.
Oh, okay.
And you might be able to get that same sandwich if you go up to Duluth.
Okay.
Grandma's.
Oh, you know, I never. You're right. I never thought of that.
You could try it.
So, it's the same grandma's. Yeah.
It probably is.
So yeah, I never did the berry sauce. I would just ask for berry a huge sauce. Size of honey mustard and dip it in that.
We have that. We have a raspberry
honey mustard.
It looks like, if you just look at it, it looks like raspberry preserves.
Oh yeah.
But it tastes like Dijon mustard in it. It's
dynamite.
That's
awesome.
Have it at Kowalski's.
I
wish it was spicier. That's my only complaint. Like, it's really good, but I wish it was spicier.
We were talking about mustard earlier this evening.
We were.
We're all mustard.
I'm always going to talk about mustard.
Yeah. I was the condiment of kings. The last time I had the opportunity to get that sandwich at Grandma's before they closed, I went there, and I'd moved away from Minneapolis, and I wasn't living in Minneapolis, and I was visiting people, staying in the hotel, and my hotel room didn't have a fridge, and I got really full because I'd eaten earlier.
No, no.
I only ate half the sandwich, and the other half was there, and I couldn't take it with because we were going to a show at the Caboose, and it was so heart-wrenching. It was like leaving a child behind.
Oh, yeah. And now you can never get it again.
And now I can never get it again, and I left it there, and I couldn't take my leftovers.
All right, question five, last question. Yes. Are you ready?
Yes.
What is the stupidest thing anyone has ever said to you about your atheism?
This was a few years back before I was fully out with my atheism to my family members. So, this is going to be a stupid thing said about atheism.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
To me. So I grew up in a small town, and I have an uncle that still lives there, and my parents still live there in the house that I grew up in. And down the street, there's this woman who's a really neat middle-aged woman. She's like the eccentric, kooky neighbor lady. And she's very spiritual. She's a little bit Wiccan. She's a little bit like Buddhist, but she's also a little, total hippie.
Neo-pagan.
That's a good way of saying it. Anyway. So, my uncle is a widower, and he, was, like, trying to court this woman, who's our friend of our family, and she's really neat. And they apparently had some conversation, and my uncle, he's very conservative, Christian, NASCAR-loving, like, smart.
Sounds awesome.
He believes that, like, The idea that smoking causes cancer is a big conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
A liberal conspiracy?
Yeah.
He doesn't believe...
Put forth by the Jewish media?
Maybe, yes. Right. But, oh, no, I don't believe... That's just BS.
Sure.
That, to give you an idea of how his mind operates.
Yeah.
And he came to me... we were conversing at some point a few days after he had spent some time around my neighbor lady, my parents' neighbor lady, and he said, you know, I'll say her name is Sally. Okay, because that's not her name, but we'll just call her Sally.
It's totally Sally.
No, it's not. It's Marcia, but... I love Marcia.
Marcia!
Yeah, I love Marcia. And, but anyway, so my uncle says, you know, Marcia, I don't think she's a Christian. I think, you know, she's like, I think she believes that Muslim stuff, and I think she's an atheist, too. wait... Uncle Larry, did you just say that you think that she's a Muslim and she's an atheist? He's like, yeah, she's a Muslim and she's an atheist. And I'm like, do you realize how incredibly un-atheistic Muslims are? Do you understand how that's not possible?
My only response would be, can you do me a favor? Can you define Muslim for me?
Yeah.
And then, okay, now we got that. Now define atheist. Okay, cool. I just want to see if you know what you're saying.
You're probably scared of us saying, no, she's just a hippie.
I spent about 30 seconds trying to explain to him that the God that Muslims believe in is the same God that you believe in. No, I believe in the Christian God. You mean Abraham's God?
Yeah.
I'm like, do you realize that that's the same God?
Yeah.
It's called an Abrahamic religion.
So anyway, I was like, okay, I'm giving up. I'm not going to
do that.
That's
pretty that's amazing great. Level of denial and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So thank you for answering our...
I have wanted to be on this show so much ever since I was in the audience on your first... show ever. Yeah, I was in the audience on your first show ever when Molly did not actually call me a stupid motherfucker. You remember this?
She didn't call you. I remember that.
You guys were talking about Prometheus, and I was sitting next to our friend Ben Ellis, and I asked a question, and I was kind of defending Prometheus.
Yeah.
And you guys,
you're right.
And you were kind of raking it over the coals.
Sure.
And after, and but
way more fun to rake it over the coals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I had only seen it once at that point. I should mention I've seen it a couple more times since then, and I am not. I would not defend it as much as I did that day.
I don't even know what it was I actually said.
I don't think you actually said anything.
I think you said, let's get out of this motherfucker.
I think I might, or like, let's end this motherfucker. Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. I was sitting near the front, and this guy was sitting in the back. And I don't, he's not even a friend of mine. I don't know. I had met him the day before, and as we're coming out, he's like, hey, man, remember? I'm like, oh, hey, we talked yesterday. Yeah, did she call you a stupid motherfucker? And I'm like, what?
He aggressively approached us after the podcast and was like telling me, like, I don't think that like your language was appropriate toward that guy. And I was
I
was like, what? And he was he was like, you called that guy a stupid motherfucker, and that was uncalled for. And I'm like, I look at Nick because I'm like, I don't think I said that.
There was,
like,
there was
I
had a really Facebook conversation.
Yeah.
And that's how we met. He came because that guy,
and I got tagged into it. And it's like, you know, because he was thinking that I cut out part of the episode. I'm like, no, I didn't.
We're speculating.
I don't cut out any of the episode. It's totally live.
What happened is in the weeks after Convergence, that guy and I became friends on Facebook because he realized we had a mutual friend. And then he and I were chatting on it about some other thread, and he speculated that maybe it was edited out. And then we tagged you, and it's all like, let's ask Tim Whip.
Oh, that's right.
And then Molly was like, and I had never met before.
Yeah.
And I had to be like, oh, no, I didn't think
you
that.
You sent me a message, and you were like, I just want you to know. Like, I did not think that
you we totally don't want to call this dude out, because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
It was a misunderstanding.
I bear the guy no ill will at all. He was looking out for me.
It was so funny. I'd forgotten that's who Zach was, because we got to know each other through Fest and stuff afterwards.
I didn't really think about it, because she calls people a motherfucker. Fuck her a lot. It wasn't appropriate to use your language at that guy. Which guy she called the motherfucker?
I don't use your pet name for other men.
Yeah. Stupid motherfucker. Like the biggest Minnesota goodbye of any
awesome. Ah! Yeah. All right. So thanks for your answers to our five questions, Zach.
Thank you
for coming out talking.
Thanks again, Mark.
Mark, thank you too.
Hi.
We're Geeks Without God. You can find us on the internet. Just search for, you know, Geeks Without God.
You stupid motherfuckers.
I'm not going to edit that out.
Yeah, bye.
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 Motherfucker, 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 motherfucker.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
How many times can I say motherfucker in 5 seconds?